Project Bluebeam, which is supposed to be a false holographic second coming or UFO wave,
right,
has been talked about for years.
Right.
And all of a sudden, we see what could be some kind of hologram up there with a blue beam right in the middle.
Right.
That's too weird for me.
Well, you know, I remember that guy. I'm trying to remember his name. He came out of Canada that was dealing with a surge something or other. I just can't remember. I'm usually pretty good about that. But, you know, that whole idea of creating holographic images, you know, that has been around a very long time. And the idea of being able to project sound, you know, if you're standing in a room, and all of us are sitting in a room somewhere listening to this broadcast today, imagine in the middle of the space between you and the wall, just in the air, imagine a voice coming from that space or seeming to come from that space.
Right.
You can create that effect. Then you can throw a hologram in the middle of it, and now the hologram's talking to you. That can be done with technology that exists today. The idea of projecting sound into three-dimensional space sort of appears to emanate from that location. That's pretty profound. And there's a very interesting article, and it was an article in Technology Horizons in June 2004, and that's put out by the Air Force Research Lab. And one of the things that they envision happening, and this is for the other end of projection, but they envision being able to create what they called controlled effects, and the whole article and the cover story was about this, where they could literally create complete synthetic images with sight, sound, taste, smell, all through electromagnetic manipulations. But those would be sort of targeting the individual, so you would see this projection that wasn't there at all. It was just in your head. So there's two ways to do it. One is to actually project into three-dimensional space, and one is to project into your consciousness an illusion that is so real you can't discern it as an illusion.
Well, one day I'm sure they're going to have technology where cell phones, for example, you'll be able to look at the person you're talking to in a live video back and forth, and probably a little holographic image of Nick Begich, for example, will be standing on my desk. I'll be standing on yours whenever we're communicating.
Well, that wouldn't surprise me at all. In fact, I'd take it even a step further, and it's not going to be too many more years. The computing power is getting closer, and the programming is getting better. Well, we're going to have instantaneous translation of language. So not only will you see the little dancing guy,
but
he'll translate his language for you all automatically, so you don't have to discern the subtleties of language. And yet, if you think about just that, the nature of the leaps that we're making technologically, and they're being made more and more rapidly than ever before. In fact, from the invention of the wheel to where we are today, in about 9 months, it will double. And that's the rate of change. And so, you know, these things we're talking about today and things we talked about, you know, 10, 15 years ago are now, you know, sort of common knowledge. I mean, even think of the Internet. It wasn't even – it was a scientific weird thing that geeks played with. You know?
Absolutely. I remember, Nick, when I was a kid and they were talking about television sets of the future will look like paintings on the wall. And I went, oh, come on. And here they are. They're all over the place.
Here they are. And actually, you can go back to the 1980s, and they had it was in Epcot Center in Disney World back in Florida. They had the first, you know, pretty thin screens that were being used there, and the kinds that you could touch, you know. But the idea that it would evolve to the extent that it has so rapidly, again, I think that took a lot of people by surprise. And, you know, and they just keep getting thinner and thinner. And they're talking now about a film that's just a few millimeters thick that can literally be put up like wallpaper. In circuitry, when you think about electronic circuits, you know, what used to fill up several rooms, you could now fit in a wristwatch. You know, that's a big change, and that change is continuing. In fact, they're saying within 20 years, the computer on your desktop could either be a million times more powerful or a million times smaller and as powerful. Think about that. I mean, it just boggles the mind.
Let's talk about weather modification, earthquake enhancement with HAARP and the possibilities there. Go back, first of all, you touched on it. Give us a little history of HAARP and weather modification, first of all. Did they stumble into it?
No, Dr. Eastland intentionally placed that in his patents. He believed that there were ways to manipulate weather, but his belief at that time was it would take a tremendous amount of effective radiated power. And that's not the power on the ground. That's the power as it relates to, you know, the location where you're sending it and the power that you grab there. And the thing about this instrument is you can think about it almost like a primer. It's a big, I mean, it's huge, but primer on a bullet. And the real energy is the energy that the Earth naturally possesses. In the case of the ionosphere, tremendous energy potentials are there. So, you know, when they started and they started thinking about weather modification, some very simple ideas came out that you could do fairly easily. One of them was the idea of what we talked about earlier, this idea of creating a hole in the ionosphere. Well, if you've got a jet stream moving in the region, what you could effectively do is divert it slightly on one end, and what happens is it takes a huge swing on the other. In fact, I can't remember the issue of Scientific American, but it was dedicated to weather, and they showed a very slight change, coincidentally, another one of those coincidences, right above HAARP, where the jet stream was altered. It moved 50 miles north and about 50 miles east, and then dropped back south again, and then went on its way. And in that particular time, it drove weather fronts out of the Dallas area where they should have been and moved them to central Florida, where a couple of tornadoes were deposited that created all kinds of havoc in the Orlando area a number of years ago. And you'll probably remember that event. Well, that's the kind of thing you could do easily with HAARP today, either as an accidental effect or a deliberate effect. But what Eastland envisioned in 2005 was much different than his original patents, and it was the use of the system for actually manipulating gravitational waves, which he felt were absolutely connected to weather patterns and weather fronts.
And right, now, would that create weather or would that change weather?
Change it is what he had in mind.
Okay.
And the other thing that he was thinking of is in terms of manipulations is, you know, perhaps, you know, other things could happen with those gravity waves. And that was like the last steps in his research prior to his death in 2007. And we had him at a conference, actually, in March of 2007. He died in December. And it was on the mind effects issue, which I know we'll get into as the show goes on tonight. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Dr. Eastland, you know, looked at HAARP as both a positive potentials as well as negative potentials. In fact, he had done a video that we had posted for a number of years. In fact, we'll get it back up eventually here. But it showed sort of, you know, what's good, what's bad. And coupling with that weather modification idea, one of the other things that he touched on was the idea that you could create ozone. You could replenish ozone utilizing this instrument on the ground. So if ozone depletion was really the cause of global warming, you know, this potentially could add to a solution. The other thing he stumbled on in his research and cited in his patents was the idea of using radio frequency energy in a very specific way to knock out particulates and particular pollutants in the upper atmosphere. Again, something that, you know, from everyone's perspective would be very positive if we buy into the man's contribution of carbon to the global warming issues.